Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 43, recorded January 3rd, 2011.
And this is our first episode in
2011. Woohoo!
Ooh, cool. Okay.
We should drop a ball of fish or something.
That's gross.
Well, you know.
Drop a ball of fish.
Sorry, okay. That was bad. So, for our announcement this week, we have an announcement.
Yes.
Sort of announcement slash request.
Or behest.
Behest. Ooh, that's a good word. I like that.
So, here it is, ladies and gentlemen.
We would like to bring you our podcast on a weekly basis instead of a bi-weekly basis.
Yes, I've been learning a little bit more about how to look at our stats and see what's going on, and we've got a lot of listeners.
All over the place.
But a lot of you are not writing in or calling in.
They're just a little bit shy.
Some of you have been repeat contributors, and we appreciate that, but we need some more calls. We need some more messages and so on. So we're going to try to make weekly updates, but we need your help. So please
send us questions or stories or
comments, anything. And we'll try to give you at least something to talk about on each podcast, hopefully.
Yeah.
Maybe more than that, but at least something. So there we go.
On to our weekly fishy updates. I guess this one is more of a snail update.
Yes.
A while ago, you'll remember, we acquired assassin snails to try to deal with the snail problem in some of our tanks. They were supposed to eat the excess snails and solve the snail problem. So, did it work? How effective were the assassin snails?
Well, in a nutshell, they work. To give you a little bit more specification, most tanks in which we've had snails have not been... It's not been an issue. You have a few snails in the tank, big deal, not a problem. But in certain tanks, it's a problem. For example, when you're raising bristle noses, you need to provide them with large amounts of vegetable food and things like that. And, of course, the snails really go to town on that, too, and so they'll reproduce like crazy in a tank like that, to the point of an explosion. Another thing is that in certain tanks, I mean, Malian burrowing snails or trumpet snails, however you want to call them, are great in a lot of tanks, but in certain setups, especially if you have some messy fish in there, they will get enough food to just go crazy in the gravel. We, in fact, received a tank as a gift, and the gravel of that tank was like 40% trumpet snails. And so I put some of the assassin snails in there to see what would happen. Now, it's important to realize that the trumpet snails reproduce asexually. The females, apparently most or all of them are females, and they reproduce parthenogenically. They don't need to mate, and they'll just produce clones of themselves alive. This is the trumpet snails. The assassin snails, on the other hand, are not hermaphroditic. They need to find a male snail needs to find a female. It's not like you have a male and a female in each one. At least that's my understanding. So their reproduction is a little bit slower in that way, but also they lay eggs. A lot of the eggs don't tend to be fertile, and they don't really lay as many eggs if they're not getting a meaty diet. So you're not trading one snail problem for another if you start getting assassin snails, because the reproductive rate is slower, and it slows down even more once they stop having snails to eat. But what do you do when you wipe out the snails? When I put the amphipods, or not the amphipods, the assassin snails in this 55-gallon tank with all those trumpet snails that we inherited, they just wiped them out, pretty much. We had to continue to go back to the pet store and get bagfuls of Malian snails just to feed them. The trumpet snails, just to feed
Which
them.
Which is mostly to get them to reproduce, so, because we want
right.
more assassin snails, but they don't have to have as high of a meat diet if you don't want them to reproduce.
Right. They'll survive for quite a long time without...
They do still need some, don't they?
Yeah, they do need occasional meaty meals, but they don't need... they don't need it to survive like every day, every other day, but they do need some. But anyway, I stopped putting snails in them to feed the assassin snails just to see what would happen. and they started to just disappear even more quickly. I used to see baby trumpet snails in there, and now I don't see any anymore. But there were a few babies in there, but now I don't see any. And the assassin snails numbers seem to be stabilized, but I've got quite a few babies in there because originally they were eating a lot, and so they were producing a lot of eggs, and so I've got quite a few babies. I've taken some into a local pet store to trade, but I'm thinking, what can they, what can I feed them? They need some sort of meaty diet, but something that the fish in the tank won't immediately eat. And so I tried out frozen mussels. The local fish store here carries frozen mussels for use as food with pufferfish and boxfish and so on, marine mussels. I put those in, and the assassin snails really go for it. So we'll see if that's a diet that will help to maintain them. Maybe I can give them just enough so that they will be healthy and keep their reproductive rate low, but at the same time help eliminate snails. But they really, really do that. They seem to be able to handle any type of snail, with the exception maybe of the cap snails, which are those tiny, tiny limpets that are mostly transparent, that show up on the side of the glass. They're just sort of an ovoid sort of volcano-shaped shell.
Are those just too small for them to even bother
with? They may be too small for them to bother with. I don't know. It could be that small assassin snails will eat them, but in the tanks with adult assassin snails and cap snails, I haven't really noticed them reducing the numbers, but the cap snails are so small, and the numbers tend to stay small anyway, so it's not a problem. But they'll eat the trumpet snails for sure. They eat the ram's horn snails. They eat the pond snails, the little football-shaped ones. And so they are a success. We've had them for over a year now.
Hooray!
We got them in September of 2009. And they work. I would recommend them if you have certain tanks in which snails are an issue. Of course, overfeeding is the worst thing you can do with snails. If you want to keep their numbers down, don't overfeed. But there are some situations where you may have issues with snails for one reason or another, like a bristlenose raising tank or whatever. And in those cases, assassin snails are great.
Great.
Well, it looks like the break is creeping up on us, so we will be back in a second.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There, that wasn't so painful now, was it?
We're back. Now, where were we?
Really quick update on the Everclean Aqua Filter.
Yes, well, so far, so good. We've noticed an increase in clarity in the tank. Seems to be doing what it's purported to do. We're not going to do the full review, in which we'll give you all the pros and all the cons and everything.
All the dirt.
Yes, we're going to give you everything, but we want to reserve...
we want to give it a nice, long enough trials that we can really
say really it does what it well. Does and yeah and really figure out what drawbacks there might be and so on. So we're waiting for that, but in general it seems to be doing what it says it'll do, so that's good so far.
Okay, the other thing, our main topic for today, is indirect incompatibility. You want to tell us what that means?
Yeah, and I'm not sure this is even the right term for it, but I'm just...
That means he's being modest and he invented this term.
Well, I don't know that I did. Either.
I get to brag about him.
I don't even know if I did invent it. I just...
Well, you didn't read it anywhere. You just pulled it out of your head, so... I'm going to say for you that you invented it. Ha ha ha.
Well, this is what I'm trying to say when I say that indirect compatibility. Maybe secondary incompatibility would be better. I don't know. But here's one example. You have some fish that aren't aggressive to each other. But say you have two fish in a tank, two individual fish, and one of them is extremely efficient at eating, and the other not so much. And so the former fish outcompetes the latter in terms of feeding. It doesn't show any direct aggression to the ladder fish, but it does eat so much food that the other one has trouble getting food.
So an example of say, that kind of fish would be...
If you have a single-tailed goldfish like a comet or a shubunkin in with a moor or a celestial goldfish, and the goldfish doesn't show any actual, you know, it's not nipping fins, it's not pushing the other fish around, but the other fish just doesn't get enough to eat. That would be an example of what I'm talking about, this indirect incompatibility. Or another, it's not always about food. One could be neon tetras and cardinal tetras. Now, neon and cardinal tetras will school together, in my experience. I've had them in the same tank at the same time, and they'll school together. And in fact, the cardinals at first were really shy, and I put the neons in there, and then the cardinals were less shy, so the neons were kind of dither fish, just helping the cardinals to relax a little bit. So I saw the cardinals better because of the neons. But there is a problem, and that's that neons like cooler water than cardinals do. So maybe they overlap a little bit at the neons' upper preferred temperature range and the cardinals' lower preferred temperature range, but basically each species will be healthier in different water of different temperatures. So they never have a problem directly, you know, no direct aggression, but they don't really do all that well in
the same tank
for that purpose. Although for me, they did okay in the temperature I kept them at. I was kind of on the higher end of the neons, lower end of the cardinals. It sort of worked. But anyway, that would be another case. Here's another one. And this is what actually gave me the idea, is that I like several fish that are really small and non-aggressive. Not just small fish, but shrimp and things like that. And so I have several tanks where I've got things like celestial pearl danios with mosses. And, of course, no one would ever suggest in their right mind that celestial pearl danios are not compatible with mosses, because of course they are. And in fact, the moss provides a great spawning medium, provides a great place for the adults and older, you know, juvenile fish to hide, and it provides food, especially for fry, in the form of microbial life, such as infusoria and so on, as well as slightly larger organisms like copepods and so on. So of course moss is very good for CPDs, but if you happen to have amphipods in the tank, the amphipods eat the moss, and they are not particularly attacked, or not particularly, how can I say it, just the CPDs don't really reduce their numbers significantly. They probably pick off a few juvenile amphipods, but not enough to reduce the numbers substantially. And the secret to controlling amphipods is controlling the amount of food they receive. Unfortunately, they like to eat things like Java moss and Java fern and other aquatic plants. So reducing their numbers by reducing the number of plants doesn't really work. And so you need to have some sort of fish in there that will make a dent in the amphipod population in such cases. And CPDs don't really do it. Red cherry shrimp don't really do it either. And so having had tanks trying to grow Java moss with celestial pearl danios and with cherry shrimp, I've noticed it's quite difficult if you got amphipods in there, because they just sort of take care of the whole business. So this is something that I found. I would consider that a case of indirect incompatibility. And without throwing the amphipods in the mix, it's not much of a problem. But if you've got those, then you've got a new dynamic going on. So one thing I found, though, is that pygmy cories, Corydoras pygmaeus, seem to reduce the number of amphipods substantially. And I thought, that was great. I mean, I see, now that I put those in there, I see adult amphipods in there, but I don't see anywhere near as many juveniles. And I think it's because the cories are wiping them out, because that's the only variable or parameter that I changed in the tank, really, was to add the pygmy cories, and they seem to be eating them. So I guess our challenge to you is to send in examples of what might be indirect incompatibility, problems that you've noticed where fish are not directly aggressive with each other, fish or other organisms are not directly aggressive with each other, but they don't really work for some secondary reason, like these examples that I've cited. And hopefully you can also mention some solutions that you found to such problems, because I think that would be a great topic. So please share your ideas on this topic or really any other one.
Okay, so we'll see you next week, and send us some emails or give us a call. Let us know what you want to talk about.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.